Hi everybody, it's Brian. It's really nice to see so many names from all over the world, including some folks that I know from home here. So thanks for joining us and checking this out. Can you hear me okay? Can you just let me know in the chat if you can hear me? We're in this bizarre technical situation where you can hear me, but I can't hear you. So I didn't hear the introduction. I was just kind of nodding knowingly, but I actually wasn't really hearing what was going on. So that's just the situation that we're in. So really happy that you're here for this. What we're going to do today is we're going to do a talk. Well, I guess I'll do a talk, and we'll start with some meditation in a moment, and then we'll have a chance to for some questions and discussion after, and we'll just have to work around the technical issues with that. So I'm actually going to share a PowerPoint. Carolyn, I'll keep an eye on my WhatsApp here if there's any technical issues that you need to let me know about. So hopefully this works. So let's give this a try. Sorry, I'm just going to try that again. There we go. All right. Okay, I'm just going to cross my fingers that you can see that, the power of connection. And we'll talk a little bit later about why I chose this graphic here. Some of you may already know. I want to acknowledge where I am. So I'm actually working with a remote Indigenous community on the unceded traditional territories of the Kitisuhéhés First Nation. So for those of you interested in geography, if you look at a map of Turtle Island or North America, and you look for a small set of islands to the left of Canada and the Pacific Ocean, if you just draw a line straight across from that, I'm on an island, a small island on the coast. So I'm doing some therapeutic work here with the folks here, and it's been a really great visit, and I'm really honored to be here. I really appreciate being on their territory. Thanks to Carolyn and Sangha Live for connecting us today and making this all possible. Most of what I'm going to share with you today, I did not invent. It's either just things I've picked up from the Dharma and or other teachers who've shared things with me. So I like to think of myself as a curator rather than an inventor when it comes to talks like this. So so really a lot of gratitude to everybody who's taught me over the years, including Jack Kornfield, Tara Brach, and many others. And thanks to you for taking the time out to do this. It's a Sunday. There's a lot of other things that you could be doing. You could be binge watching a Netflix series right now, and you chose to be here. And so I really appreciate that, and I hope that you find it helpful. I'm just gonna check my WhatsApp here to make sure that we're on track. Okay, I don't see anything from Carolyn, so I think we're okay. So a few agreements here that I thought would be good. Just confidentiality. So whatever is said here in the group is going to stay in the group. We're not here to do therapy necessarily, but we'll have a chance to share some things about our lives later on. Safety, just making sure that we're creating an inclusive space of people of all identities and backgrounds. Taking care of your needs. So whatever you need to do, if you need to adjust your posture, get a drink of water, get up and move, then that's totally fine. I usually ask on the Zoom platform, I usually ask people to have their cameras on. I don't think that that's maybe an option on Crowdcast, but if it is, then it's nice to have cameras on just to increase the sense of connection between all of us. And something that I wanted to mention that I struggle with sometimes when I'm doing online workshops is limiting distractions. So it's really easy to have five tabs open and to be playing Scrabble and updating your Facebook while you're in a session like this. And I would encourage you just to maybe power down the phone, close the other tabs, and just practice being here, just doing this together for the next hour and a half. So but just before we sit together, I want to share a poem that I really like by an Indigenous poet named Joy Harjo, who's from the Creek Nation. And At near the beginning of the poem, she encourages you to turn off your computer, and I suggest you not do that so we can keep working together. So you might just want to get into a comfortable seated posture just to receive Joy's words. Joy was a poet laureate in the U.S. or is a poet laureate from the United States, the Creek Nation. So just maybe just getting into a receptive seated posture. You might feel the spine lengthening a bit. Feeling the feet connected with the earth. The contact between the body and the cushion. Hands resting effortlessly. You might even have the hands just resting skyward on your lap or your knees, just to be in a receptive space. So here's some of Joy Harjo's words that she's gifted to us. Put down that bag of potato chips, that white bread, that bottle of pop. Turn off that cell phone, computer, and remote control. Open the door, then let it close behind you. Take a breath offered by friendly winds. They travel the earth, gathering essences of plants to clean. Give it back with gratitude. If you sing, it will give your spirit lift to fly to the stars' ears and back. Acknowledge this earth who's cared for you since you were a dream planting itself precisely within your parents' desire. Let your moccasin feet take you to the encampment of the guardians who've known you before time, who will be there after time. They sit before the fire that has been there without time. Let the earth stabilize your post-colonial insecure jitters. Just going to repeat that one. Let the earth stabilize your post-colonial insecure jitters. Be respectful of the small insects, birds, and animal people who accompany you. Ask their forgiveness for the harm we humans have brought upon them. Don't worry. The heart knows the way, though there may be high rises, interstates, checkpoints, armed soldiers, massacres, wars, and those who will despise you because they despise themselves. The journey might take you a few hours, a day, a year, a few years, 100, 1,000, or even more. Watch your mind. Without training, it might run away and leave your heart for the immense human feast set by the thieves of time. Do not hold regrets. When you find your way to the circle, to the fire burning by the keepers of your soul, you will be welcomed. You must clean yourself with cedar, sage, or other healing plant. Cut your ties to failure and shame. Let the pain you're holding in your mind, your shoulders, your heart, all the way to your feet. Let go of the pain of your ancestors to make way for those who are heading in our direction. Ask for forgiveness. Call upon the help of those who love you. These helpers take many forms: animal, element, bird, angel, saint, stone, or ancestor. Call your spirit back. It may be caught in corners and creases of shame, judgment, and human abuse. You must call in a way that your spirit will want to return. Speak to it as you would to a beloved child. Welcome your spirit back from its wandering. It may return in pieces, in tatters. Gather them together. They'll be happy to be found after being lost for so long. Your spirit will need to sleep a while after it's bathed and given clean clothes. And now you can have a party. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place else to go. Make a giveaway. And remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this. Help the next person find their way through the dark. Okay, so just noticing how those words echo through your experience, noticing what's coming up. And then you might start resting your attention inside of this body. Just letting go of all the cares and concerns of the outside world. And this morning, given the topic, I would invite you to work with the breath, if that feels safe enough in a particular way. I picked this up from my colleague, Melissa Appleton. So just noticing how the breath can be received up the heels and up the back body on the inhale. And noticing how the breath can cascade over the crown and then flush down the front of the body on the exhale. So you come to this circular style breathing of the inhale coming up from the earth, up the heels, all the way up, enlivening, dignifying the body. And then allowing, softening, dissolving any tension, any holding on the exhale. So if that works for you, feel safe enough, then you can do that. If it doesn't, then it's okay to just rest your attention with the breath somewhere in the body that does feel right for you. Or if the breath doesn't work for you at all, then just resting your attention with another sensation in the body. Breath coming up from the earth, up the back body. Cascading over the top like a waterfall and flushing down the front body on the exhale, back down into the earth. You don't have to force anything, just noticing and receiving the breath in this way. On the inhale, letting go, dissolving on the exhale. Most of us will notice that the mind will go for a walk into stories, into plans, memories, judgments. And that's a great opportunity to be kind, to notice what's happening and maybe smilingly naming it or greeting it like an old friend. And then choosing, if you'd like, to invite your attention gently back here into this experience in the body. Receiving the breath as it is on the inhale up the back body, enlivening, energizing the body. Softening, entrusting on the exhale, back down into the earth. And again, as the attention wanders away, as Joy Harjo would say, call your spirit back, or a more secular way of saying it may be call your attention back. Back to this body, back to this breath, back to this connection with earth. Back to this. for the last few minutes, we could invite in some metta bhavana or loving kindness phrases. So perhaps on the inhale, may I be happy. On the exhale, may all beings be happy. On the inhale, may I feel safe. On the exhale, may all beings be protected and safe. On the inhale, may I be healthy. On the exhale, may all beings be healthy. On the inhale, may I be liberated from suffering. On the exhale, may all beings be liberated from suffering. Maybe just letting go of words and effort and resting here for a moment in attention with things as they are. Whatever benefit we gain from this session together today, may it serve not just us, but may this practice be of service to the liberation of all living beings. Okay, thank you for your practice. Optional bow if you'd like to. Okay, so I'm going to stop sharing and come back. Okay, thank you for doing that practice. Does anybody have anything they'd like to share in the chat about how that went or what you noticed in that practice? For those of you that joined late, we're kind of in a one-way audio conversation where I can't hear you, but you can hear me. So we'll make use of the chat. Did I put you all to sleep? Busy mind today, hey Lori? Yeah. Anything you can tell us about how you worked with that, Lori? Glad you enjoyed the poem. I'll type the name of that in the chat in case you want to check it out. Yeah, she has some great collection of poems that you could buy online as well. Patricia, I'm glad that breathing technique worked for you. And JB, yeah, put yourself to sleep. That happens sometimes on the cushion, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm glad that was helpful for you as well, son. Right on. Yeah, that was taught to me by my colleague Melissa Berry Appleton, who I teach a lot of retreats with. She might even be on this call. I'm not sure. If so, hi, Melissa. Yeah, I found that to be really helpful. Oh, Lori, I'm glad that you benefited from that poem. Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? All right, so feel free to keep sharing about your experience. I'm going to go back to screen share and go into a bit of a talk here. Which will be, well, maybe I won't give you a preview. Let's just do it. Yeah, so we're talking about the power of connection, and was great to do that opening connection practice with you, and I could even feel connected with all of you, which is strange that we can even feel that way through a computer screen and the internet. There's a long tradition here in Canada, in the colonial context that we're in, of white settlers like myself going in and taking knowledge from Indigenous people and then bringing it out to the world without permission. So I don't want to do that, and I think that my host here, in the Kitisew Hehe's Nation, would be okay with me sharing that. I have just, it's just been such a beautiful week that I've been here, and this is my fourth trip up here. And I think that my host would be okay with me mentioning that something that really stands out to me, having grown up mostly in a white settler context in Canada, is that when I'm socializing with people here, when I meet them, the biggest question that people seem to lead with is, who are you related to? Or where are you from? Right? So they want to know about your connections. They want to know about your relationships. And that's very different from the circles that I mostly roll in, where the first question at a party or a dinner is, what do you do? Right? What do you do to be productive in your life? Whereas people, I've noticed that people in the Indigenous communities that I've been in are a lot more interested in connections. So that's something that I've It's just kind of a simple thing, but something that I think is just so beautiful, and that I want to carry forward in my own life. What are your relations? And so I wanted to check in with all of you about who or what you've connected with that's allowed you to get this far into the pandemic. So we're all still here. And what have you been connecting with? Has there been an online sitting group that you've been connecting with? Has it been connecting with your kids? Maybe with your dog, with your garden, with a forest that's near you. Maybe you've been connecting with a new creative skill, like learning to play the guitar or art. So maybe you could just type into the chat field there some of the things that have allowed you to get this far into the pandemic so far. Yeah, or if there's been a particular connection that's made a difference for you in terms of making it this far in the pandemic. Nature, reading, trees. Yeah. Your horse. Nice, Helen. Nature, reading, meditation. Yeah. Emma, great strategies there. Yeah, JB, stand-up comedy. Yeah, extensive mental health team. Thanks, JB. Wildflowers, spending time online with your elderly parents. Yeah, great. Okay, so please keep going. Nice one, Charlie. Yeah, keep going, and I'm going to go back to screen share here. Wes Scoop Nisker is a beat poet who you may be familiar with in the Bay Area, and also a Dharma teacher. And he writes, "With breath, we can feel connected to every form of breathing life: trees, grasses, fishes, birds, mammals, worms, microbes. Everything is breathing, trading nutrients in a worldwide exchange of gases." And I know not all of us have the privilege of getting into wild spaces, but when I do, I really notice this. I really notice the non-separation between myself and the wild places that I get to visit. We know that in the Western world, and I would say maybe particularly in the so-called province of British Columbia, where I live, we've been experiencing this crisis of loneliness and addiction. On our national broadcaster in Canada, CBC News, they had a special just a couple months before the pandemic, about January of 2020, about this epidemic of loneliness and addiction, and a United Way survey of about 700 adults in the Lower Mainland found that about 45% of people felt like they didn't know their neighbors in Vancouver, in the Lower Mainland. So we are, you know, because of some of the economic factors that we're up against with capitalism, the increasing gap between the rich and the poor, we're seeing that this people are feeling increasingly separated and lonely in the Western world, and that one way that people turn to feel more connected and to feel some way of soothing themselves in that kind of context is reaching for various forms of addiction, from cell phones to substances. And Johan Hari, who has a few great TED Talks on the connection between disconnection and depression and addictions, has written that the opposite of addiction is not necessarily sobriety, but it's connection. And I actually have a brief talk by him in a moment, and I'm really hoping that the sound works, so we'll see. A large study of 20,000 participants in Switzerland found that loneliness is associated with adverse physical and mental health and an unhealthy lifestyle, including chronic diseases, high cholesterol levels, diabetes, psychological distress, and depression. It's turning into a bit of a depressing Dharma talk, isn't it? But we're gonna get into some solutions here. So I figured out how to share the sound on this, Carolyn. So maybe you can just message me on WhatsApp to tell me if the sound's working, if people can hear this, okay? So let's give this a try. No sound, okay. Well, on YouTube, look up Johan Hari and connection, and might find some interesting stuff. Yes, he also has a book on this topic that he's released over the last year or so. All right, so we're social animals by nature, and we've gotten this far largely through the connections that we have for each other. So we've been in this really unique situation during the pandemic where we've had to follow public health measures to ensure the well-being of ourselves and other people. So in that context, if you're feeling lonely and finding it difficult, then you're not imagining things. And maybe there's some things that we can do about it. And I forgot to mention that when I share the Dharma, everything that I share is voluntary. And so I might share some things that fit for you or seem like they might be helpful and some things that don't. So I'm just laying out a buffet and you get to decide what to put on your plate. So, connection is a way that we can stand together against the dukkha of disconnection, of this illusion sometimes that we are disconnected. And something that I have to remind myself of is that we're already connected. That for the last 13.8 billion years, we've all been made of the same stuff that's constantly getting rearranged. The body's cells are replaced every 7 to 10 years. There's this exchange of oxygen, carbon dioxide, water, and minerals between us and the world. And climate change and COVID are perhaps really unique opportunities for us to understand how interdependent we actually are. And I think that following some of the public health measures that we have has been a really interesting exercise in that, of understanding how the actions that we take actually have an impact, not just on our immediate neighbors, but on people around the world. For good and for ill. Thich Nhat Hanh, who you probably know, is a fantastic senior teacher, Vietnamese Zen monk. He writes that for a table to exist, we need wood, a carpenter, time, skillfulness, and many other causes. Each of these causes needs other causes to be. The wood needs the forest, the sunshine, the rain, and so on. The carpenter needs his parents, breakfast, fresh air, and so on. And each of those things in turn has to be brought about by other conditions. If we continue to look in this way, we'll see that nothing has been left out. Everything in the cosmos has come together to bring us this table. Looking deeply at the sunshine, the leaves of the tree, and the clouds, we can see the table. The one can be seen in the all, and the all can be seen in the one. When I get back home to Sechelt, the unceded territories of the Sechelt First Nation, I actually have a wood slab waiting for me that I'm going to be working on to make into a table kind of similar to this. And when I'm doing that kind of woodworking, I try to keep this in mind, just all the different connections and conditions that had to be present to, for this piece of wood to be in front of me, and that I'm part of that too. I'm part of that process as well, as Thich Nhat Hanh points out here. So I find in my life, in terms of relationships, that I think of a lot of things on a spectrum or a circle. And so this is a little mini Venn diagram. I think many of us in the Western world are brought up with this notion of the self-contained individual. And we're encouraged on this line of being independent or self-sufficient. And then at other times in our lives, or maybe some of us have tendencies because of trauma that we've been through or the way that we are brought up, that we might actually find ourselves very enmeshed in the lives of other people, in partners or friendships or family members. And it seems like both of those can lead to a lot of suffering with on the, if you're very far on the independent side of the spectrum, you forget that you're actually interconnected with other people. On the codependent side of the scale, if you're enmeshed with somebody, then if they start struggling or going down, then you get pulled down with them. So what I'm going for in my life a lot of the time is neither this nor this, but actually having, you know, your hands in Ujjayi or a prayer position where you're connected with other people in your lives, you care about them, but you're not enmeshed with the lives, with their lives or with their outcomes. And I find this is really helpful for me as well as a therapist, as a trying to take a respectful position in people's lives of neither being disconnected and so pulled back that I'm not connected, nor imposing myself on people's lives or trying to force them to change in ways that I deem fit. So during the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, we've seen a lot of really unfortunate behaviors and reactionary behaviors. But the historian Yuval Harari, who wrote the book Sapiens, that some of you may be familiar with, he's a Israeli historian. He's pointed out that never before have so many people taken strong action, not just for themselves, but for the health and well-being of other humans who they've never met. So that's a paraphrase of Yuval Harari. So I have to keep that in mind when I get a little bit frustrated with some people's responses to COVID that to me seem a bit selfish and disconnected maybe from the well-being of others. I have to remember that actually billions of people during this pandemic have taken really strong action that was uncomfortable for them, not just in an effort to self-preserve, but actually as an act of compassion and care for their neighbors and for other people on the planet. I'm just going to look at my time here. Yeah, some of you may have heard me talk about this before, drawing on the work of Daniel Siegel, who's I think he's a psychologist from UCLA who heads up the UCLA Center for Mindfulness and for Mindful Awareness. And he has a great model that I find really helpful in terms of thinking about connection, which is the hand model of the brain, where we can, and if you're a kinetic learner, you can do this with me. I don't even know if you can see me right now, but if you can see me, you might hold up your hand, palm forward. And so Daniel Siegel's model is that the forearm is like the brainstem, and the palm of the hand is like our 300-year-old brainstem, which is connected with birds, dinosaurs, and lizards. Sometimes people call it the lizard brain. This is part of the function of this brain is our survival mechanism of fight, flight, freeze, which does a really good job of keeping us safe. And our ancestors on the African savanna really needed this in order to survive when there were large megafauna and predators around. So it's not necessarily bad. This is how moms lift cars off of their kids when you hear those stories. But you know, some of us who've experienced trauma, this part can be quite active. You know, some of the social and political and economic conditions, I think, can really exacerbate this part of us, this fight, flight, or freeze part of us. About 200 million years ago, if you fold over your thumb, as Siegel says, it's too bad that most of us don't have two thumbs because it'd be more convenient for the model. But if we had two thumbs, it would look like that. That's your midbrain or your limbic system, which is related to memory and emotion. So the mammal brain, and also our ability to have attachment. And so that's memory and emotion. And it's interesting, I think, because when we've had difficult experiences in life or traumatic experiences in life, what happens, according to Siegel, is the brainstem interacts with the midbrain and encodes implicit memory, but tends to suppress explicit memory. Meaning that you might see a person, place, or thing that your nervous system puts you on alert, that there might be a potential threat, and this fight, flight, or freeze system gets fired up to protect you from a potential threat. About 100 million years ago, we started developing what's called a cerebral cortex or a neocortex. So if you fold over your fingers, it looks like that. These two fingernails, hopefully I have clean fingernails, is right here, roughly, you know, above your eyes. And that's called the middle prefrontal cortex. And so one of the functions of the middle prefrontal cortex, a lot of our neural connections by default fire from the bottom up. Siegel calls that flipping your lid. So if your kids say something that kids are really good at knowing how to push a button, sometimes they'll say something and you'll flip your lid. This higher, you know, part of ourselves is offline and we're just in that reaction mode. But when this part is online, your prefrontal cortex, it could really help us because there's neural fibers that go down from the middle prefrontal cortex down to the brainstem that have an inhibitory effect on the firing of the brainstem. Meaning that when this part is active, it can really help us with managing anger, with impulse control, with ethical decision making. And when I was doing some of the research for my master's thesis 10 years ago, they had already started doing some interesting neuroscience work with long-term meditators and found that the prefrontal cortex was more active in terms of electrical activity and blood flow in long-term meditators, and also when people were in meditation. So that's interesting. So we can form these top-down neural connections for the benefit of our mental and emotional health. The other nerdy neuroscience fact that I wanted to share with you, that you might share with somebody around a dinner table the next few days if you want to sound smart, is there's two hemispheres of the brain, as you probably know. The left hemisphere of the brain is related to intuition, so-called soft skills, empathy, creativity, and the right brain's related to that. The left brain is related to mathematics, logic, and the harder science skills. There's actually some connective tissue between that, which is called the corpus callosum. So that's your $10 word for today, corpus callosum. And one of the studies that I read when I was doing my research said that the corpus callosum actually seems to get thicker in long-term meditators. There's increased neural connections and fibers that happen together. As Siegel says, whatever fires together, wires together. So that's called bilateral neural integration. So that seems to be part of mindfulness meditation as well, as we get this effect of integrating not only from the top down, but also laterally from side to side between these two parts of the brain, these two parts of ourselves. So I wanted to share that with you. So despite the physical, and also I guess the other thing related to our topic is there's also mirror neurons that we have. So we have neurons that actually match up and mirror the person who's sharing something with us. So empathy. When we're practicing empathy with somebody, it actually lights up these mirror neurons in our brains as well, which I find really interesting. So I like to look at this from a very macro sociopolitical perspective, and then also from a more narrow neuroscience perspective, just to get different perspectives on this. Despite the physical distancing we've been doing, what can we find creative ways to stay connected? You're already doing that, and it was great to hear about some of that in the chat. We can connect to our present moment lived experience via mindfulness. And one definition of mindfulness that I really like, in the modern formulation of mindfulness, there's a lot of emphasis on present moment awareness, which can be really helpful and important. But the traditional definition of mindfulness was actually sati, S-A-T-I in Pali, which had more of a connotation of remembering, which is interesting to me. Remembering to pay attention, remembering how connected we already are. And also, our attention, it's so easy for our attention and our sense of self to get so dismembered, like a stone that's thrown into a puddle. Our attention gets scattered by the high stimulation mainstream culture that a lot of us participate in, social media, advertising, caffeine. And we sometimes we forget this connection that we have. And so I see this sati, or this mindfulness, is a way of putting ourselves back together, remembering this connection that we just inherently have with others. Some of you mentioned in the chat, your relationship with nature has been really helpful during the pandemic. And there's growing evidence to suggest that getting into nature can be associated with improved mental health. Closeness to green space has been associated with lower levels of stress and reduced depression and anxiety. This is something I'm very passionate about. And I'm also passionate about finding ways for people from BIPOC communities to have more access to those kind of experiences, because sometimes folks with less privilege don't have access to the natural world. So I think that that's something that we need to all work on together, and to remember our connection and where we come from. We're not just on the earth, we're of the earth. Our bones are made of calcium, magnesium, and silicates, the clay of the earth molded into our shape. Our bodies are made up of water that has the chemical consistency of the oceans. We literally sweat and cry seawater. So again, the poet Wes Scoop Nisker sharing that. And, you know, there's increased evidence lately as well about the role of mycelium. And you're probably familiar with the fruiting bodies of mycelium, which are mushrooms or fungi, and the role that they have actually in helping trees to communicate with each other. So there's connections that happen not just in the world that we see, but actually underneath our feet. There's all of these, this network that's happening beneath us. And trees secretly talk to each other underground. They're passing information and resources to and from each other through a network of mycorrhizal fungi. Mycos means fungus and rhiza means root in Greek. A mat of long, thin filaments that connects an estimated 90% of land plants. Scientists call the fungi the wood wide web. Wow, that's like a dad joke that I would tell. The wood wide web, because adult trees can share sugars to younger trees. Sick trees can send the remaining resources back into the network for others, and they can communicate with each other about dangers like insect infestations. So I find that really interesting. I'm trying to be more mindful of that when I'm walking around in the forest by my house. Another thing that some of us have found helpful to connect to is novelty and wonder. And sometimes in the mundane parts of our regular lives, and when we've been practicing social distancing, it can be really important for some of us to connect with that sense of novelty and wonder. When we're on the cushion, to cultivate that sense of wonder at being alive, at the way that this body breathes us, at the wonder of each breath being unique and no two breaths being exactly alike. And then when we're out in the world, even when we're moving about in spaces where we normally are, just noticing things like it's the first time you've ever seen them, with that childlike wonder and with a fresh set of eyes that this practice can bring to us. For some of us, connecting with grief has been really important during this pandemic, and allowing ourselves to feel grief. I think a lot of mainstream Western culture seems to be allergic to grief. It's something that we don't like to talk about. and we don't have a lot of rituals associated with grieving our losses when they do happen. And some of us also find that it's been interesting and helpful to feel a sense of connection with our ancestors. I've been thinking a lot about some of my ancestors who went through pandemics, including the Spanish flu, and you know, what lessons they might have or what they may have learned. So for some of us that are comfortable using the imaginal realm for that, that can be like a source of comfort and connection for us as well to culture and to ancestors. And for some of us, we can do that through various rites of passage that are available to us, which is, I could spend a whole other talking about rites of passage, but some of us have connections to cultural rites of passage that we can access. And some of us who've been disconnected from those traditions or practices have to use our creativity with ourselves and maybe with other people to co-create rites of passage to grieve our losses and to feel that sense of connection sometimes with ourselves and with ancestors and with the world. And maybe the, you know, your meditation is a form, your meditation practice is a form of rite of passage for you. And then of course there's Sangha, fitting given the name of this platform that we're on. I want to, I guess it wouldn't really be a Dharma talk without a traditional Buddhist story. So I wanted to share a traditional Buddhist story translated by Andrew Olensky called the Skinny Gotami and the Mustard Seed. So after flowing on for 100,000 ages, she evolved in this Buddha era among gods and men in a poor family in Savatthi. Her name was Gotami Tissa. But because her body was very skinny, she was called Skinny Gotami. When she met her husband's family, she was scorned and called daughter of a poor family. Then she gave birth to a son, and with the arrival of the son, she was treated with respect in her community. But that son, running back and forth and running all around while playing, he met his end. He died. And because of this, sorrow to the point of madness arose in her. She thought, before I was one who received only scorn, but starting from the time of the birth of my son, I gained honor. These relatives will now try and take my son in order to expose him outside in the charnel ground, like to cremation. So under the influence of this sorrow to the point of madness, she took the dead corpse on her hip and wandered in the city with the baby corpse or with the child corpse from the door of one house to another, going from door to door, pleading, give me medicine for my son. People were horrified, saying, what good is medicine? But she wasn't able to grasp what they were saying in her grief. And then a certain wise man said, this woman has had her mind deranged by sorrow for her son. The Buddha will know the medicine for her. And said, mother, having approached the fully awakened one, ask about medicine for your son. So this person sent her to the Buddha. So she went at the time of the teaching of Dharma and said, blessed one, give medicine to me and my son. And the Buddha, seeing her situation, said, go, having entered the city, go into whatever house has never experienced any death and take from them a mustard seed. So go collect mustard seeds from houses that haven't experienced death. Very well, sir, she replied. And glad of mind, she entered the city, came to the first house. The masters called for a mustard seed in order to make medicine for my son. If this house has never before experienced any death, give me a mustard seed. Who's able to count how many have died here? Then keep it. What use is that mustard seed to me? And going to a second and third house, her madness left her and her right mind was established, thanks to the encouragement of the Buddha. So she thought, this is the way it will be in the whole city. By means of the Blessed One's compassion for my welfare, this is what is seen. And having gained a sense of spiritual urgency from that, she went out and covered her son in the charnel ground. And she uttered, it's not just a truth for one village or town, nor is it a truth for a single family, but for every world settled by gods and men. This is indeed what's true, impermanence. And so the master said to her, have you obtained the mustard seed? Finished, sir, the matter of the mustard seed, she said. You've indeed restored me. And the Buddha said, a person with a mind that clings, deranged to sons or possessions is swept away by death that comes like mighty flood to a sleeping town. And the conclusion of the verse, she asked the master to go forth as a monastic, and she and the master allowed her to go forth. Yeah, so this actually reminds me of a retreat that I went on at Spirit Rock Meditation Center that some of you may know about, or some of you have maybe been to. And I was on a men's retreat. This is about 15 years ago now. And I was walking along through a beautiful forest during a walking period. And I came to see that something was kind of shimmering in the light. And I looked closer and I realized that it was pictures of people. And when I looked closer, I realized that it was photographs of people who had passed, and that other people on retreat had set up this space to honor people who had died. And there were beautiful, there were just beautiful poems and tributes to people that were written underneath the photographs. And there was babies, pictures of babies. There was very old people. There was LGBTQ folks. There were straight folks. It was all across the spectrum. And I just started weeping uncontrollably in this forest. And because I was realizing that I was going to die, that the leaves that were falling from the trees were going to die, that my partner back home was going to die, the baby that we had was going to die, everything dies. And I just fell apart. And then we were called back into the meditation hall, and some of my toxic masculinity training came up where I'm not crying in front of other men, but I just kind of said forget it and just went in and just wept on the cushion for an hour. And you probably could have wrung out my Zabuton after, because I wept so much just grieving this truth of impermanence. And it's not like I resolved my relationship with mortality, but it certainly helped. And just realizing my connection with everybody else, that this is all the situation that we're in. And it really, I think, calls us to pay attention to these precious moments that we have when we are here, and these relationships that we have with people. And I think having lost a number of people prematurely the last few years to overdose and other tragedies, it's really called me to pay attention, more close attention to my life, to really be with my kids when I'm with my kids, and to really try to be with you here when we're here together as well. So thank you for joining us on this talk on connection. I also wanted to actually, just one last thing I wanted to say about that, a couple things, is that sometimes when we grieve, I think we have this impulse, maybe it's a culturally conditioned impulse, to retreat and to go to ourselves. And maybe we have to do that, but I just wanted to raise the possibility of grieving together. That's something that I encourage with couples sometimes when they're having a hard time with each other, is what would it be like, instead of going into your separate corners, to actually grieve together, grieve this disconnection that you're experiencing together. And maybe we can do that together. And I really encourage you to connect with Sangha. I think that there's a reason why the Buddha pointed us towards what's sometimes called the Triple Gem, or these three refuges that we take. So in the harsh realities of this existence that we have, where we don't get things that we think we want, and we get things that we don't want, like a pandemic or a roommate that we don't like, that we don't care for, we can take refuge in the Dharma, in the teachings, like the teachings that we're talking about today, or if you want to just think of it as the truth of your moment-to-moment experience. We can take refuge in the Buddha, or the Buddhas, the many wise teachers who connect us with the truth. And so that can be Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha. It can also just be your inner knowing, the truth of this moment. And then Sangha. So having this connection, the traditional word for a spiritual friend is Kalyanamita. And I have many of them. Actually, I'm smiling right now because I'm just thinking of all the connections that I've made on meditation retreats over the years. And I feel like most cities in North America, I'd have people that I could call on to sleep on their couch if I was visiting their town. And we have this platform, which is amazing. We're networked with each other here around the world, around this practice and these teachings. And so I really want to encourage you to connect, you know, when it's safe to do so, to connect with people in person who are doing practices like this. and also in the meantime to connect online and to keep attending these Sangha Live sessions on Sundays. I think that there's a daily sitting that they have as well. When I'm out of this PowerPoint, I will also link you to a daily sit that we have here in British Columbia at 7 a.m. Pacific time. So that would be in the afternoon in Europe and late morning on the east coast of Turtle Island. So you're welcome to join us for that. It's Rachel, Lewis, and myself lead that each morning. And you're welcome to join us for that anytime. And if there's not a Sangha in your area, then I encourage you to create one. You know, JB and I and some others about almost 20 years ago now co-created a peer-based sitting group that was called DIY Dharma, Do-It-Yourself Dharma, which I think still exists in some form today. But that was a really great way to establish the practice by being with other people. So really encourage you to explore connection through Sangha. And you're not always going to like everybody in Sangha. Sometimes there's people in Sangha that are going to rub you the wrong way. And that's part of the learning and part of being in community as well. So in these strange times, I am hoping, I've got my fingers crossed, COVID willing, that I'll be able to teach in-person retreats again. I haven't been doing that for the last couple of years. But I am currently scheduled for a retreat at the Cocoon Retreat Center in Portugal in October of 2022. That's with my colleague, Melissa Barry Appleton, that I referred to earlier. And so if you're in Europe or if you're over here and you want to come join us for that, then I encourage you to do that. And as things start opening up in British Columbia, I hope to be offering some more things locally as well. And you can always find information about me and my practice on Facebook, I'm very active on Instagram, and on my website, which is briandeanwilliams.com. So I'm going to throw this back to us, or to all of you. What kind of connections would you be interested in pursuing for the remainder of the pandemic? Or, you know, any other reflections that you might have or questions that you might have? So I'm going to stop sharing my screen and come back with all of you. Yeah, so I'm not going to be able to hear you, but if you want to speak, then yeah, please put it in the ask a question box or in the chat field as well. So yeah, any reflections on what I shared, anything that stood out to you or that resonated for you, any critiques? And while we're waiting for folks to chime in, just wanted to remind you that this practice is offered without charge. And in order to maintain the platform and to recognize the labor that goes into it, I would encourage you to make a donation if you haven't yet through Donna. Donna means generosity, so being as generous as you can. And when I am offering Donna, I try to use it as a mindfulness practice and check in with myself around my intention. So not giving out of guilt, not giving away all of your rent money, but also just seeing if there's any clinging as well as you're making a donation. So that's how I like to work with that. So, and I know it's easy just to log out and forget to do it. So if you haven't had a chance to do that, I encourage you to do that. Lori, thank you for joining us for your first ever one. That's great. And you're feeling very inspired to connect more this way. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, Lori. So welcome. You're welcome to come here any Sunday. Carolyn, is there still a daily sit with Sangha Live? And I'm just going to find the link for the daily sit here as well that I'm part of. I'm still here. I'm just finding the link for the morning sit. Okay, so here's the, you might want to copy and paste this somewhere. Yeah, so you can go to bcims.org, and then the actual Zoom link is right there. So you could copy and paste that into an email or something to save it. And so again, that's 7 a.m. Pacific time. I think London is 8 hours ahead of us, so that would be 3 p.m., I think, in the UK. Yeah. And yeah, it looks like Sangha Live has some great practices going as well. For those of you that are in recovery or interested in recovery, Recovery Dharma also has some daily sittings about the connection between this practice and sobriety or recovery from addiction. When am I giving a practice next? So I don't know. I think, Carolyn, we may have scheduled something for 2022, but I've been teaching a little bit less lately, and I've been a little bit more focused on my work here with the First Nation that I'm working with and on my clinical practice. But okay, yeah, so we're not scheduled yet for 2022, but we will be soon. Yeah, any other feedback, questions? Looks like we've got a couple questions here. Okay. Would love to hear more about DIY Sangha for one's locality. Okay, so yeah, DIY Dharma, I think it's the website might still be up, diydharma.org. So basically, JB, Kira, a few others of us in Vancouver, we're getting interested in Buddhism and meditation, but we didn't feel a sense of connection with some of the existing sanghas. So we just co-created one, and we rented a yoga studio. I think we paid them maybe like $20 at the time. And we just would, somebody would set it, we'd do a check-in in a circle, pass a talking piece around. We'd either play a recorded guided meditation, or somebody would just ring the bell. And then afterwards, we would have an opportunity to share about our practice. And then it also started expanding into potlucks and social activities, and it was a vibrant community that I got to be part of, and definitely had a social justice sort of interest or bent to it as well that I really appreciated. So yeah, it was in East Vancouver, and that was great. That was great. Loved hearing stories about the Buddha. The mustard seed story was wonderful. You're welcome, Florence, yeah. And a great way to access some of those more traditional teachings, if you go to the website, Access to Insight. AccessToInsight.org has a lot of the traditional Buddhist stories there if you're interested in pursuing some of those, Florence, yeah. Yeah, any other questions or feedback, comments? And this is my website. And if you're interested in being on my mailing list about future events, then please email me, and I can add you to my. I only send out about one. I try not to spam people, so I send out about one email a month, just letting people know what I'm up to in terms of workshops and retreats. Yeah, and it's okay. There's no, yeah, definitely Carolyn is saying that there's no pressure here to make a donation if you're not able to. Are Indigenous people welcoming or curious about my spirituality? Great question, Julian. Yeah. Yeah, I would say there. I think we have a lot to learn from each other, and I think that it's really interesting how a lot of Buddhist ideas seem to really overlap with Indigenous worldviews and ways of seeing things. So there does seem to be some compatibility there. And it's not something that I am here to impose as a Buddhist missionary or anything, but we do have some good open conversations about some of the overlaps. And when I'm doing my clinical work one-on-one with people, I do share mindfulness practice and some of the folks here seem to really be appreciating that and benefiting from that. So, yeah. All right, Andrea, speak more about enmeshed relationships and how to protect ourselves from enmeshment. Yeah. That's a whole talk in itself, isn't it? I think an important first step is self-compassion. So you're just having that moment of awareness and noticing when we are feeling enmeshed. Noticing, and you can notice that sometimes in your body when you're feeling that, like that tightness or tension in your body in an enmeshed relationship. And I think, so self-compassion, so rather than being critical of yourself or beating yourself up about it, just noticing that, having compassion about it. And I think that it's occurred to me lately, I've been working with addictions for about 22 years and walking alongside people through various addictions. And it's really struck me lately, I don't like making large sweeping statements, but it's almost always true that most of the people that have gotten out of an enmeshment with a substance or a person has almost always involved learning how to pause before resorting to our habitual conditioned reactions. So learning how to insert a pause before you reach instantly for a person that you feel dependent on or for any kind of habit. So I'd say self-compassion and inserting a sacred pause or seem to be an important part of, and then forming allies. And those could be other people who've been through that experience. It could be a therapist. It could be a Dharma teacher or a spiritual friend, like we're talking about here, to kind of check your experience against and see if you're imagining things or if it's real. And that can be really helpful too. Yeah, because sometimes those relationships can be crazy making, like, you know, like the woman that we heard about in the story. So connections, people can be great sources of clarity and sanity for us, especially when if we're being manipulated in a relationship. Yeah. So thank you for that question, Andrea. Yeah, you're welcome, Lori. All right. So if that feels complete, I just want to thank everybody for your time and for your attention and for being patient with me and us with some of our technical issues. So it seems like it worked out. And I really appreciated the opportunity to be here. Thanks to Carolyn for hosting us. And look forward to connecting with all of you again on this platform or otherwise. And hopefully we can sit together in person sometime. That'd be great, in Portugal or somewhere else. So yeah, thank you. Thanks everybody. And if you, if there's anything else I can do to help you, feel free to reach out by email. Yeah, you're welcome, Florence. Bye everybody.